Today on The Grave Talks, Ghosts versus Spirits, a conversation with Cale Epperson. Ghosts, spirits, and the energies from beyond the grave. To the unstudied individual, it sounds simple to understand the difference between all of them. To those who have dove deep into the subject, know that the family tree of the dead, the states of existence, go far beyond a simple label. Where does this energy come from? Why does it decide to stay? And what draws the living to seek them out? Today, we discuss all of this with Cale Epperson on The Grave Talks.
Basically, just from childhood, I've always been kind of sensitive to the world, the spiritual world around me. And I really had a huge hunger for spirituality at a young age. And it really kicked in probably in my teenage years. Basically, you know, when you start seeing weird stuff and you can't explain it, I know my parents at the time, if I'd tell them I would sense something or feel something or see something, they would just kind of blow it off. Like, you just got an overreactive imagination.
Sure.
But, for myself, I don't go around and call myself a psychic or a medium. I can go into a location and I can tell you if it's haunted, and rare occasions I can tell you if I feel like it's a man or a woman. But, I don't go around telling people I'm psychic or medium because it's I'm not that strong with abilities, if that's what you want to call them. But I think everybody has the ability to sense the paranormal. I think most people just ignore it as something that's common and they just go on and do whatever. I was very sensitive as a teenager, and when I went to church, I was always hungry for the word and spirituality. And of course, at the time, I didn't realize it was going to be a calling to help people. But I've always been kind of sensitive to the spiritual world around me.
When you say it was kind of like a calling to you that you didn't realize at the time, but later as you got more and more into it, what were some of the things that really drew you further into the world of paranormal, other than just being a curious child and having that as an interest, having that as a passion? What were some of the triggers, if you will, that pulled you deeper into it?
Oh, I don't know. I just have always been fascinated by it. I was real big into like studying like Bigfoot and stuff. And even though I'm not a Bigfoot researcher, I was always interested in something paranormal. I don't know, just something just kind of triggered. I loved reading stuff on like the Loch Ness Monster and the Mothman and stuff. For some reason, it's like, if stuff like this exists, how come they can't find proof on it? And I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain when you feel like you have a calling to do something. Sure. It's just further along, I just kind of felt like, if people are actually having problems with things in their homes and being harassed by entities, and I'm sure you probably watched a lot of the old 80s paranormal shows where people are having all these haunts and being harassed, and it's like, there's got to be some way of proving this stuff is real. Is this stuff really happening, or is it just people just making it up in their minds? And I don't know. It's just it's hard to like pinpoint.
Sure.
The exact time. I think most people, when they feel like they have a calling to do something, they just feel it. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
It does. I do totally understand where you're coming from, where you're just kind of drawn into it. And as a calling, I guess maybe the question should be, as you found this interest and you wanted to go and dive deeper into it than just watching reruns of Unsolved Mysteries, which we've all done many a times.
Oh, yeah.
What was there a desire there to prove that these things are happening to yourself? Or was it more of a drive to help those being affected by these incidents?
I think it's a little bit of both. And truthfully, I, you know, just kind of thinking back on it, it really didn't kick into gear. I'm trying to think when it was. It was back in 2000 and around 2004. I worked at a mall. I do security work, and I worked at this particular mall. I'm not going to name the mall in Oklahoma City. And I would always have people tell me, like customers or tenants saying that they would have these weird experiences in the mall. And at the time I was like, well, I'm not seeing anything. And I didn't really start noticing like the paranormal activity at this location until they put me on the night shift. And when I started working night shift, I started hearing weird things in the mall, seeing things. And I actually worked the night, this particular security job, we worked with two officers, and one of the officers was an off-duty police officer. And the building that we're in is completely locked down. And he tells me there's an intruder in the mall. And we go and we search this mall, and he's chasing after somebody. And he calls me on the radio and says, okay, I got this guy cornered at a dead end corridor. And he gets in the corridor and there's no one there. And it was just one of the craziest things. And then we ended up finding out later that mm-hmm. the land, I guess, used to be a lake, and we were close by a cemetery. And we think a lot of the paranormal activity actually probably came from the cemetery, even though no one ever died at the mall itself.
Yeah.
But we kind of felt like it was probably from the cemetery. And we would get weird stuff on our radios. I had a call over the radio, and it sounded like a guy who said, my boat's sinking, I need help. And it was kind of a mayday type thing. And I'm looking at my other officer like, did somebody hack into our channel? But we ended up finding out later, when this used to be a lake, they used to have boat rides. And apparently there was an accident where one of the boats was sinking. And I'm like, what? This is weird. You know, it's just, yeah, you know, you get crazy stuff like that. And I even had another incident there of one of the stores. They had an alarm go off, and I end up calling the owner, and I talked to the owner on the phone. It was probably about 2 p.m. telling him that, hey, your alarm went off, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he's telling me like, okay, you know, we'll get it figured out. And the next morning, his daughter comes in to work, and she's upset. And I tell her, I said, oh, I'm just letting you know that, you know, your alarm went off, and I contacted your dad. He was the owner. And she goes, contacted my dad? I said, yeah, it was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we note everything down on a log. And she's like looking at me funny. Well, apparently that night he died at midnight.
Oh, God.
And I made the phone call a little bit after 2 a.m. And I'm like, who did I talk to? And I recognized his voice because I talked to him before.
Yeah.
And it was one of the weirdest experience. And I did a podcast not too long ago called Ghost Phone Calls. And like, I was basically talking to a ghost of someone that just passed away. And that just blows my mind. And I don't know, when it comes, sorry if I sound like I'm rambling, but
no, you're fine.
It just surprises me. Like when I go out on cases and I do investigations, if you get like disembodied voices, and it makes you wonder, how does a ghost do that? You know, because we all know where a voice comes from. It, you know, it comes from your voice box. It's just vibrations of your muscles and stuff. But how does a ghost do it if there's no body and it's nothing but a spiritual form, but you still get voices? It's little stuff like that blows my mind. Like you see objects move, or mm-hmm. you see apparitions. It makes you question, like, are these spirits of real people? Are we dealing with, interdimensional people? It opens up so many questions. Like,
it does. And it makes you wonder, at least I end up wondering, because, I operate for the most part, I believe these things are happening, that these experiences are happening to people. I take people at their word, and if they're making it up, well, okay, they're making it up. Some people make things up. But I do believe that a majority of the stories that we hear are legitimate, and people have these things. I get so fascinated almost into, like, the logistics sometimes of, like, well, how did the voice resonate over the phone to you in the middle of the night if this person is dead? You know, like, right. like what is that is causing that? Take me back. I know you said, you know, it's like, oh my God, you had that moment. But when you found that out, when you were talking to that daughter that said, my father died last night at midnight, and you know full damn well that at 2 a.m. you were on a phone call with him, and he was responding to you just as if you were alive. Like, okay, yep, we'll check the alarm. We'll get that figured out. No big deal. Not like, oh, I'm dead. Sorry, you'll have to talk to my daughter in the morning. It's, you know, when you square that up, what is going through your mind? What was going through your mind at that moment of hearing that? I mean, literally walk me through the thoughts and the explanations that your brain is trying to come up with to square all this up.
Well, it was almost like a pause period. Like, it's like being hit by a truck. Mm-hmm. You're trying to comprehend what happened.
Sure.
And trying to explain to her that, no, I talked to him at this time. Mm-hmm. And I even brought back the log. We have a phone log.
Yeah.
And it showed his phone number at that exact time and how long the conversation was. And it blew her mind too. And of course, she was obviously upset. I could tell you she really didn't want to be at work anyway because her father just died.
Yeah.
But naturally, they have a high-priced business that they have to run. And I could tell it kind of caught her off guard too. But it just made me pause, like, what the heck? I mean, yeah, it's crazy. It just blows my mind.
Did you asked her, you know, well, who was I talking to? So you were just doing out of innocence. It wasn't like, I talked to your ghost dad last night, and it wasn't ghost dad Bill Cosby. It was your real dad. And 10 of our listeners just got that joke. But
right.
the fact that you reiterated to her that you believed you talked to her dad after he died, how did she take that?
Well, at first she may have thought that the times were wrong. Maybe okay. she thought that maybe I talked to him earlier, but it's like, no, the alarm went off at this time, and this is the time I talked to him, because anybody that's in security or law enforcement, they have to document times and they have to be precise. And it's like, no, here's my log. This is the time I talked to him. And I could tell with her, it was probably more, she was probably thinking, well, you probably just cut, you got your times mixed up. But I knew dang well I talked to him around 2.
Mm-hmm.
And if he died at midnight, who in the heck was I talking to? And of course, at that time, I really, I wasn't thinking of ghosts or anything like that. I mean, I was just doing my normal job.
So, sure.
You know, you just.
Was it a case where he died in his sleep in his bed, or?
Yeah, they found him at home.
Okay. And so it makes you wonder, you know, was his spirit, you know, his soul, whatever you want to call it, still operating, not even realizing he was dead? He heard the phone ring. He got up. In one way, shape, or form, he got up. Right. Maybe his body didn't, but something did that answered the phone, and he wasn't even aware he was dead. Versus, you know, he got in a car accident on the way home, and he wasn't even in a place where he could be answering the phone. It's like all the elements are there for him to have been doing his normal routine of life. So it's so plausible that he would have answered the phone had he been alive. But then, yes. then it makes you start going down the road of, okay, when someone dies and they're unaware of it, how long can they be unaware of, in fact, being dead?
And I think, well, it just, I've been on a lot of paranormal cases, a lot of residential cases, especially if it's an older home. And I've been on cases where the ghost that's inside the house is still living their normal life. And they're not even aware that there's a new family living in the house. I think a lot of the paranormal cases I get, it's not because they're scared of the ghost. The ghost is a nuisance. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they put something on the shelf, come back later, and it's moved somewhere else. Or there's noises in the middle of the night, and they can't debunk it as something logical. And we'll get EVPs of maybe a person or people talking, but they may not be aware of our existence. So it's like it could either be like a residual type haunting. Maybe it's an echo from the past, or it's an intelligent haunting. They're just not aware that there's people there. So when you review your EVPs, you're just hearing random EVPs that just doesn't make sense. They didn't go along with your questions. They're just kind of blurted out there.
Do you think sometimes when we're communicating with them or attempting to make communication, whether it be through an EVP session or ghost box or insert object here that communicates with the dead, do you think, we oftentimes operate on this assumption that they're hearing us and they can hear us clear as day, but we can't hear them clear as day. We need these devices, or sometimes we need an individual who is sensitive enough to pick up on what they're hearing. Do you think, and this is just an opinion question, maybe they're not always hearing us just the same way we're not always hearing them? Maybe they need to take extra steps, maybe extra energy, something that needs to take place on that side for them to pick up on what we're saying. Otherwise, maybe they're just seeing our mouths move, or maybe they're not even seeing us in this environment that they're inhabiting.
My personal opinion, and anything in the paranormal field is either a theory or opinion.
Yep.
I make people mad sometimes, even at conferences, when I tell them there's no physical proof that ghosts exist. people freak out, but technically there's not. There's no physical proof that ghosts exist. What about EVPs? Well, I can prove an EVP exists, but we don't know what's causing the EVP.
Yeah.
But I believe when it comes with ghosts, spirits, or demons, that it's all energy based. I believe it's based on energy levels, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I did a case in Stillwater, and it was an old theater, and we ran into the situation where there were three ghosts haunting the building. It was two women and a male, and throughout the night, we kept seeing the male's apparition. Even though we couldn't get it on camera, each investigator was seeing the same apparition at different locations. So I asked the question of, can you see me? And that's one thing I always do on my investigations, is I ask the question, can you see me, or do I look fuzzy? And sometimes we get responses back of either they can't see us, or maybe they can see us clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But the Stillwater case was so interesting because the two female spirits could see me and the team, but they couldn't see the male spirit. The male spirit could see us, but he couldn't see the two female spirits. And I thought, well, that's weird. They're all in the same building. So only thing that gets me is I think it's based on energy, or maybe there's a type of grid or something. I mean, we really don't know what's on the other side. Mm-hmm. But I think that works too. I do something, it's called a knock test. And it's pretty basic. I'll say something like, if you can't see me, but you can hear me, I'm going to knock twice to let you know where I'm at. Can you knock twice so I know where you're at? and maybe we can come closer together. And I'll say, this is me, and I'll knock on the wall or something, and then I'll wait and see if we hear a knock back. Mm-hmm. And on rare occasions, we'll hear a knock back from maybe a different room or something. And I'll say, okay, if that was you, thank you. We can try this again. I'll knock twice to let you know where I'm at. Can you come closer and knock again? And I think it's Guthrie Haunts. It's a fun house, but it's a haunted house. So we did that test there, and we actually got the spirit to come to us. This spirit literally knocked into the same room. It was on the opposite side of the building, and it actually came to us in the same room, knocking on the wall. But it was clear that the ghost couldn't see us. They could just hear us.
Yeah.
So I think it's based on energy. I really do. And maybe that's the reason why some people can see apparitions and sometimes they can't. I think it's based on energy. Like with taking pictures and you get an apparition on film, mm-hmm. I think that camera has to be in the exact spot at a certain time for that energy to be just right to snap that photograph to get that apparition.
Do you think it may also have something to do with who's taking the picture as well? Almost the reference that I'll make sometimes is back to the days when we used FM AM radios. I can remember being out on the boat with my dad, and he would never be catching any fish. So I would be sitting there trying to get radio stations in. And what you would have to do many times is stand there and hold the antenna. And when you held the antenna, you became part of the antenna. And that in turn made the signal strength as far as what that device is picking up that much stronger. You let go of the antenna, it's back to static and fuzz. Do you think that's that sort of theory, that sort of operandi works the same with the spirit world, where an individual, and I'm not just saying any individual that's holding the camera, but a certain individual that maybe has more spiritual abilities or more of a connection to the other side, and they can hear the other side. Maybe they're more psychic. Maybe they're more empathic, something of that nature. Does that affect who's going to pick up more evidence, whether it be an EVP or whether that be something on film or camera?
I think it can. Have you ever used dowsing rods?
I have not, but I know what they are.
Yeah, we use dowsing rods on rare occasions, and I've had it where, you know, I'll have a new ghost hunter use the dowsing rods, and they may or may not get anything. And then I can have someone that's been in the field for a while use them and get tons of responses. When I use dowsing rods, my spirituality is really high. And the spirits seem they can communicate better with me. And some of that is they may be using your energy to help manifest and do things. So, yeah, I do believe sometimes it is the individual, mm-hmm. Not just equipment wise, but even contact wise. If you're dealing with a negative person, they may not want to talk to you. Ghosts are just people like you and me. And if I'm an aggressive ghost hunter and I'm trying to force them to talk to me, well, if I was alive, I wouldn't talk to you if you're being aggressive to me.
Sure.
And it's the same way if you have a child spirit. You don't want to talk to a child spirit like they're an adult. You want to talk to them like they're a child. Mm-hmm. I think it's all based on the individual. I've been on cases where I had past investigators, they don't get nothing, or we don't get hits because maybe that investigator's in a bad mood or there's an issue or something. While other investigators they may talk to. There's times on cases I'll split the team up between guys and girls because sometimes the ghosts don't want to even talk to the guys. They just want to talk to the girls.
Sure.
You know, it just depends on the case. I had a case down in Anadarko, and we made contact with an African-American male, and apparently he was abused, and of course it was the time period that he lived in, And he did not want to talk to anybody on the team except for my African-American investigator. He would fully communicate with her, but everybody else on the team he did not want to talk to. And then we end up finding out that, you know, he ended up dying from being beat up, you know, being attacked. And this was like in the early 1900s, apparently, when he died. So I can kind of see him only wanting to talk to certain individuals.
Sure.
Cases sometimes here in Oklahoma, if we go out to Concho, Concho is a old Indian or Native American, used to be an old boarding school. But when they shipped all the Native Americans off the plains, they shipped some of them here to Oklahoma. That was the area that they shipped them to, and all that's reservation land out there. And some of the spirits during that time period were abused or treated unfairly, and they're very picky on who they want to talk to and who they don't want to talk to. And it was whatever their life experiences were at the time.
Sure.
You know, myself being Native American, they don't have an issue talking with me. If it's a Caucasian investigator, they may be hesitant in speaking with them. And again, it boils down to, you know, whatever happened into their life at the time. I mean, you never know what you're going to deal with when you get into a case. You know, if you investigate a prison, yeah, you may be talking to a spirit of the guard, but you may be talking to a spirit of a serial killer too. So
yeah,
you never know. Psychic, or what is it? Old mental institutions. Mm-hmm. Always warn my investigators. Every time we go to a mental institution, you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, because if they were crazy in death or crazy in life, they're going to be crazy in death. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I always found weird too. I do believe there's a difference between ghosts and spirits. I believe ghosts are human individuals who died traumatically, and they have some form of unfinished business. Ghosts seem like they have to draw energy from the environment to manifest. And I don't know if you've been ever on a paranormal case where you ask the ghost name, and the ghost doesn't know its own name. It's like, how do you not know your name? Mm-hmm. And I started figuring out it has to be energy based. They start being forgetful. But spirits of human beings, I truly feel like, are individuals that maybe died of just natural causes and crossed over to whatever the afterlife was and came back for some reason to help people. I had a case in Edmond where the homeowner was in hospice. She was dying, and she believed her spirit of her daughter was there, and she didn't know why her spirit of her daughter was there. Her daughter was murdered. And I remember the case interview because it really caught me off guard, because I'm interviewing this lady. She's in a wheelchair using oxygen, and she's telling me this stuff, and we're doing the interview. And I said, well, why do you believe that she's here? And she goes, well, I'll show you. And she said, and she just kind of hollered out in the blue. She said, Shante, can you come and sit in this chair right here? And all of a sudden, the recliner reclined on its own. And I'm just kind of looking like, okay. And when we did the investigation, we got EVPs of her daughter. And we played them back to her. And she said, that's Shante. That's my daughter. And then I think it was like a year or two afterward, mom passed away. And I kind of had a feeling that Shante probably came back to lead mom into the afterlife. Because you always hear stories of people when they are dying, they'll see family members around them, mm-hmm. or they see angels, or maybe they'll see a spirit of somebody they don't know. My wife's grandmother, when she was passing away, she said she kept seeing a little girl that kept trying to get her to go outside with her. And this was on her deathbed. She's like, this little girl, she keeps trying to get me to go outside. And that's all she kept saying. And the doctor's like, oh, she's just delusional. You know, I don't believe that. If she says she saw a little girl, I believe she saw a little girl.
Yeah.
So.
So I'm trying to understand this because this is an interesting concept of you separating spirits and ghosts. Spirits, and correct me if I'm wrong, are those that really retain a lot of the living memory of what life was like in the living. They can respond to, they know their name. Is that correct? Spirits are the ones that seem to have more of the human-like attributes in terms of memory and such?
Yes, because you can say, you can ask the spirit, what is the year? Okay. And they can tell you the today's year. Like a ghost, I can say, can you tell me what year it is? And they may say, oh, it's 1975. Well, you know, it's not 1975. Mm-hmm. It's our current year, you know.
Both can be conscious, though. We're not talking about residual versus non-residual. We're talking about two variations on conscious energy.
Yeah, they're more conscious to their surroundings,
yeah,
if that makes sense. Now, I ran into ghost cases where, you know, you can ask, can you tell me who the president is? And they may think it's President Taft.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, President Taft's not around anymore. But in their environment of whatever they're seeing or whatever they're sensing, that's who they believe is the president. So that kind of helps, too, during your investigation process of, okay, obviously this person is from this time era if they believe this is the president,
mm-hmm,
or they believe this is the year. Yeah, it's weird. That's what gets my interest going.
That wraps up the first half of our conversation with Cale Epperson about ghosts versus spirits. In part two, the difference between spirits and ghosts. What causes a spirit to know and retain their living memory just like it's living, yet ghosts, as Cale describes them, seem to slowly have that memory slip away along with the energy. And what does Cale consider the difference between ghosts and spirits? Do ghosts sometimes get stuck on an object or repetition and need human interaction to help break that focus? Are there specific areas that hold more energy because of the living activity at one time? Or do they have free will to move where they please? And do spirits sometimes choose places of heavy human activity to haunt because they can blend in more? We'll talk about that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. As a supporter of our program, you can do so by going to thegravetalks.com and clicking Become a Gravekeeper, or go directly to patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month will get you access to part two of this conversation, along with hundreds of our interviews, all of them there for you in their entirety, part one and part two, to binge away upon. It's all there at patreon.com/thegravetalks, as well as advanced episodes of the show, commercial free, you get to listen to before anybody else. That's what supports our program and keeps us on the air. We greatly appreciate your support. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.